Hey everyone, it's Mary Lou Tyler. This week's guest is Natasha Hemingway, and she's going to talk to us today about her career in sales and give us some pointers, not necessarily at top of funnel, but the middle and the bottom of funnel. So I know you guys are going to love this because I have bombarded you for years with top of funnel stuff. And it's great having some experts attend and be part of the show who have the rest of that pipeline for you. So welcome, 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 Natasha, to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Mary Lou. I'm so excited to be here and honored to serve and pour into your listenership. So I'm excited, honored to be here.
Great. I'm so glad you're here too. We don't get a lot of women on my podcast, so yay, let's celebrate that.
Listen. I'm super excited because you're exactly right. We don't see a lot of us in the sales industry.
I know. It's crazy. So I'd like to start off by asking you, as I ask a lot of folks, you know, what got you interested or what pulled you in to the sales, to sales as a career for you?
Yeah. So I graduated from college with a biology degree, and I thought, I want to go to med school. My mom's a nurse practitioner. I have an aunt that's a OBGYN. I have an uncle that's a dentist, orthodontist. Like, it's just in my family. And so I grew up around that, and I thought, I want to be an OBGYN. And as I got to college, and I was like, no, I actually do not want to go to school for that much longer and have all of those loans. I was like, no, I don't think that's what I want. So when I graduated with the degree in biology, I knew two things existed about me, and that's just me to my core. A, I love people. And B, I wanted to be able to help people, right? Like, how can I help people? How can I be around people in conversation? I'm just a people person. And so I knew that I could not go work in anybody's lab. Okay. Mm-hmm. I could not be a biologist in a chemistry lab or a biology lab, no windows, lab coat. That's not for me. And so I started discovering and finding out, and in college, what I also started doing is I went into physical therapy. I started getting my hours to apply for physical therapy school. And at that point, they had come out with a doctorate of physical therapy. And I'm like, oh, this might merge the two things, people, helping people in a science, biology-based kind of related way. And then three, being able to still have a doctorate of some sort. But at the time, that was like the career to go into. And I knew I did not want to put all my eggs in one basket. So I applied to two physical therapy schools. And then I also started looking into how to break into the medical, like, world industry of sales. Both pharmaceutical sales at that point was the hot thing. It was like the thing to go to. It was super popular, great opportunity, but it was really hard to go into because, to be honest, Mary Lou, at that point, they were only mostly hiring male pharmacists with the company that I was looking into. Because I wanted to be with a reputable company that had been around for years, that had the proven track record that I could really learn from. Mm-hmm. And as I went into that, I was like, I am a African-American female. This will be interesting. Let's definitely not put all our eggs in one basket, because it was a male, white male dominated pharmacy industry. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, again, I need to have a backup plan. So I applied for both. And at the time, I was like, I just prayed about it. I was like, you know what? Whatever comes first, I'm going to trust that that's the path that I should take. And I ended up, like, surprisingly getting into pharmaceutical sales. And I moved to a new city right after college, and I started and never looked back. I have literally spent 16 years in corporate sales on the rep side, the management side, and 8 years in both companies. So very much a loyalist. I spent 8 years in pharmaceutical sales, and then I went to a higher level sales of medical device sales, a lot faster pace, a lot more money, and a lot more cutthroat. So that's kind of how I ended up being there, because it married the two things. One, being able to be around people and using my science background, my biology degree, and two, mm-hmm. being able to support, help, you know, people in regards to what I was selling, because I'm a firm believer in, like, you need to believe in what you sell to in order to be successful, in my opinion.
So given the fact that you're coming from a bio background, do you feel that that prepared you from a sales process point of view, and then you needed to learn the what to say part, or did you kind of abandon the process side and just focus 100% of your time on learning the sales conversation. What would you say your path was when you made that decision to go into sales? What was the very next thing that you're like, oh, goodness?
Yeah, I think you honestly, I think you have to actually know both. When they start you in sales school, right, you're learning just like the message, the niche, the product, all those things. But I think in order to be an excellent sales rep, you have to know the process and you have to know the strategy. And it's one thing to follow the company's process and the strategy, but then how do you actually make it unique to you, right? Because you're out there with 400, sometimes 500 other reps, you're ranked, you have quotas, all these things. So I think as you grow, you really start to understand, wow, if I'm going to really master this and get promoted and be like a lifelong salesperson, I need to know process and strategy just as well as obviously the messaging, the what to say, the how to say. So I think as you advance and you grow, you start to understand deeper really what's going to make you an excellent sales rep that allows you to be promoted, to lead teams and things like that. So I would say starting out messaging, niche, knowing what to say, then really starting to understand that no, to be excellent, it's then process and strategy. And how do I make it unique to me?
Interesting. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the process and strategy. That's my first love, is understanding two things. I'm a programmer, so my whole being wants to program something. If I do something more than once, chances are it should be programmed. You know, that's my mentality. So as I started looking at the sales process and the way my rhythms were, I started noticing things that I did repetitively by hand and look towards ways that I can leverage, whether it's technology or pre-prepare things ahead of time, whatever it was, to help me so that I don't have to reinvent the wheel every time.
Yeah.
How did you envision process and strategy? Where was your first move there?
Yeah, I think that is exactly it, is when you are a sales rep and you're in a corporation, right? The company gives you like the handbook, the Bible, the training, but it's for you to actually understand your clients, your territory, opportunities, gaps, churn. You need to know all of these things. And you're exactly right. That's what happens. And I'm a very type A perfectionist type of personality. So my thing was, how do I maximize opportunity and reduce time? So my brain kind of is like yours, Mary Lou, is like, if I see something that I'm doing over and over and over, or if I've noticed something that's working for three of my key accounts, what and how do I actually make that a process to actually implement it or duplicate it in these other accounts to help them grow, right, to be a key account? And so I think you understand very quickly is that you're doing a lot of the same behaviors. And as you start to find rhythms and trends and strategies that are working, it's like, why wouldn't you start to go and see and test that to say, okay, I did this here. What does this account, you know, that's over here in this other city have the same potential? Does it make sense to be there and put this type of process and strategy and attention and time, all of that there? And if so, do it, test it, and figure out what works or doesn't work.
But you said a key phrase that I think in my travels, I have been beating my head against the wall about this, but you naturally just said, I am looking for things to help my clients grow, to help my clients. You're putting the client in the center of this whole equation.
1,000%. And I think we often get it so wrong as sales reps.
So wrong, Natasha.
We're so focused on our goal, what we need, growing quotas, making money, hitting bonuses. And it's like, that's literally why my business sits under the umbrella to the point that it's trademarked, selling with heart, not hustle. Because when we do that, that's the hustle part. You're worried about yourself, but really, as sales reps, we're service-based industry. Like, you may be selling a product, but you're there to serve the client and advance their growth. And the minute that you start flipping that and you make what you do and what you're selling about the heart of the client, what they need, why they need you, and then you explain or can articulate to them why you have the best solution or why you're the best person to bring a solution to their problem, the money comes. Right? The growth comes, but it's like we get it so backwards. where it's like hustle, hustle, hustle. And it's like, no, slow down and really tap into your account, because every single thing that you do, if you want to know a process or a strategy, know your customer. You want to know how to grow them, know your customer. You want to know what they need, know your customer. It always goes back to them, and it actually helps you develop the process and the strategy where you no longer become a sales rep. You're actually a partner. Right. And there's a sense of trust that's built from that. And then there's no resistance around like, I don't know if I can trust doing that, or I don't know if we should go that route. It's like, oh no, we're in partnership with Natasha. She is thinking about our best interests, our bottom line, what growth we need. And so when she says something, we trust it.
Right, right. So is this idea that you have naturally, I would say, and you say we get it wrong, is it coachable? Is it trainable to flip that with any sales rep that you've ever taught or mentored?
Absolutely. What's so cool, Mary Lou, is that like, I don't care if they're male clients of mine, female, introvert, extrovert, love it. Now, this style of selling around selling with heart, not hustle is literally flexible to any personality. It's just that, is the person willing to trust it, right? Because when I start breaking down simple things and I reverse engineer them why this way works, it's like, huh, I never thought of it that way. Like, but sometimes it's just revealing it to them, because there is this certain amount of energy that you have to constantly put in check and in place when it comes to selling, right? Yeah. The hustle, the money, the goals, the quota, the expectation, the outcome. It's so much that we just get spun up into it, but it absolutely can be coached. I don't care if it's a company, if it's a small business, if it is a person. And we've seen it happen with other corporations who do it this way. And even in their marketing, they're shifting towards that, where it's really forward facing, because the bottom line is we are in a world where we're dealing with conscious buyers. They're very, very conscious. They're very aware. And they want to know, do you care or you don't? Like, right, to some level or degree, they want to know. And so, yes, it is. It's duplicatable. It is flexible. It can be taught to anybody.
So when you go in and work with companies and sales organizations or teams,
yeah,
and with a process and a strategy in mind, do you look physically at the pipeline and start attacking certain areas, or do you first and foremost take a look at their existing account base if they have that? You know, where do you, when you step into over that threshold to a client?
Yes.
Where are you focusing first? Are you focusing on the clients, or are you looking at the physical setup of their pipelines and processes?
I would say first, it's about the customer and the client, like what is currently going on and what do they perceive are their gaps.
Okay.
Right. And then I think it's then looking at, right, the client base, the like digging in deeper. Right. But I think no matter what, both have to exist if you want to take a holistic approach, because sometimes I think as consultants, we can come in with like, this is how you fix it. But it's like, although that can yield a short-term win, or you can completely miss the mark, again, if you're starting with finding out as much information that you can from the client, it's going to actually help you better develop a customized process or strategy for that said client that meets their needs, because that's the goal. Like you said, we're there to help them grow, not hit our agenda, but what is growth to them? What do they want? If you don't start understanding that, or what do they perceive as gaps? Because a lot of times they can't see what they can't see. And so the more information, when we come in with an open mind and we're willing to kind of start mining and pulling back the layers, we're going to have a better understanding of what we see that's going on, and then what they perceive, and then what needs to then be done, that you can come to an agreement of what actually meets the solution that they're looking for.
Okay. Now, you said you really, you know, the light shines on middle and bottom of funnel negotiation. I love the fact that you love negotiation, because that's quite an anomaly, I think. You know, people are just so fearful. A lot of reps are in this sort of hope mode, and, you know, you're going in with negotiation, you're going in I guess it's because, let me answer my own question and you correct me or not, but
yeah,
because you're so focused on the client and you want them to win, then you go into the negotiation looking for that win-win.
That
naturally.
That right there, that's why it has to start. You hit the nail on the head. That's why it has to start with the customer at the beginning, because you automatically gain trust. I tell people when they come on a strategy call with me, one of the first things I do after I welcome them to the call is I let them know, newsflash, I am not here to sell you me.
Yeah.
I'm not here to sell you me, my business, my team, my corporation, my solution. No, I'm here to find out two big things: what you need and why you need it. And then out of integrity, if I know that I have the solution to help you, I will invite you into that opportunity. But if I don't, out of integrity, I will let you know that. And so it's just disarming that and the closing the negotiation. Why I love it so much, because I'm such a people person, it's a lot of EQ. It's a lot of really shifting your mindset, having confidence around how do you just simply communicate? Because that's what sales is. It's serving and communication. And I say the three pillars to sales success is communication, energy, and then the strategy. And the sales process and the strategy sit under that. But it's like, if we don't understand that, like we get caught up and we're like in our emotions. And I'm like, relax. You're there to provide them a solution. That's why they're there, because they believe that you have what they need and they want to advance the conversation with you. So a lot of times we trip ourselves up by getting in our own way. When you shift that energy and the focus to the client, not what you're going to say, not what you're going to negotiate, not what your pricing is, not if they're going to say yes or no, not how badly you need them to love you, buy you, not how much, you know, are you scared? It's not about that. The minute you start flipping to their focus and what they need, that's a switch.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I'm assuming that these are, could be small, medium, or large deals that you're negotiating. It doesn't really matter, because the playbook, quote unquote, or the way that you approach it would be the same or similar, but you have more people to deal with, more personalities.
Right. Perhaps. Right. And I think you're exactly right. It really does not matter, right? Yeah. It doesn't matter the size of account. Obviously, the size of account may require, you know, other people that handle certain arms or other team members that are needed, that, like, you know, we were talking about like contracting in, where it's like, you know what? I'm bringing in Mary Lou. She is going to focus on top of funnel, period. She is the expert. She's the strategist. I'm going to take middle to bottom, right? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think in bigger contracts, it's smart. Bring in more experts so that you get to the goal and you get there quicker, right? Mm-hmm. And that's understanding capacity. And then I think the smaller businesses, usually those can be taken on a little bit easier. One, but still there might be an opportunity to bring it in. But I think at the end of the day, it doesn't change.
Right, right.
It's just my approach, right? And if they're open to receiving that.
So let's talk about some of the gaps that you found, just in generic terms, the middle of the funnel. What are the common either mistakes or trends that you're seeing that, you know, that are that seem to be ubiquitous? And has COVID, you know, we're in the middle of COVID here still.
Yeah.
Has that impacted some of your strategy as far as the middle of the pipeline is concerned?
No, I think if anything, it's highlighted the focus of how much you need to be focused on middle of pipeline. So that pipeline advancement, middle of pipeline is the biggest trend that I see. And the biggest issue is companies not really having, I would say, authentic, genuine follow-up processes. Because you know this, we say it in sales all the time, the fortune is in the follow-up. And it's one of the biggest gaps where people drop the ball. One, they don't have system and process and strategy in place to make sure the follow-up happens, the ball doesn't get dropped. Or two, they're so busy trying to move so fast and generically automate the process that we don't also have some kind of organic touch process in there. And we miss that, because people, again, we're dealing with conscious buyers. So let's say it's a SaaS company, or I don't care what the company is, but they have inbound, outbound. Hello. There is a lot that can be done in that middle advancement where we can ensure by having a process and a strategy that we don't drop the ball when it comes to follow up. Right. I think when it comes to the closing and the negotiation and things like that. So let me back up. I would also say, again, the follow-up is where I see the ball drop, but also not having an actual process and strategy for your said company team to follow. Or if it's there, something is not working. And I think sometimes we get so fast, or we want to turn the sale, and we're talking about this like high touch, low tech model. I think there's a need for both, right? It's great. We have high tech, low touch. Great. That works. But there's a subset of customers too that you may be missing out on that need high touch, low tech. Mm-hmm. Is it there? Does it exist? What does the process look like? How are you unique? Because we have so much technology at our hand and we forget we're communicating with humans.
Yes. And as my CCO loves to say, rubbish in, rubbish out. So even if we have the best follow-up engine and technology in place, the conversations that we're putting in there have got to resonate and have got to feel as if we care, and that we are addressing the needs and what resonates. And instead of these bots, you know, it's almost like you get these messages. Yeah, they're timely and there's a lot of them, but
that part, I was just going to say the whole bot chat thing and, and not having a live person that I can talk to.
Yeah.
I know the platforms and the services that I use on the back end for operations for my business. Mm-hmm. I would much rather pay more money for a platform that is going to, if I need to escalate something, that I get a live person, right, or that they will send me a loom and they will walk me through something, because you are wasting my time when I'm trying to get to a solution and I have to go through 15 million chats and it's a live bot chat. And then somebody emails me 2, 3, 4 days later and I can't even still get it. Like, you cannot do everything through tech. No. And so that is a huge, huge, huge issue I see in that whole like midline and then closing. You know, it depends on, is it web-based inbound, outbound, or is it like face-to-face, or is it phone, whatever it is, that varies. But that goes back to that, like I said, the mindset, this kind of like, I just want to close the deal. It's like, no, are we actually focused on that person and what's best for them and actually meeting their needs? Because when people feel that and see that, they'll buy from you all day. The price point doesn't matter at that point. Literally, it does not matter how expensive it is. It's about how you made them feel. And do they feel like they have a solution and that you actually care that closes them? What do you, I'm curious, Mary Lou, on your end, what do you see at like top of funnel of gaps and issues?
The main thing is we feed, I call it, you know, the rocket ship with banana fuel. We haven't done the work with the, it's all the same, Natasha, with the client in the center. Yes. We haven't done the work to say, is this an ideal account for me? Is this account one that I would chase manually? I do want to have as a client because I feel that we can best serve them and really understand at a deep and meaningful level the people within those accounts that are going to benefit from a conversation. That planning up front is absent in so many. Why? Because we can buy lists, we can throw them into an automated system, and we can just churn the heck out of it and blast all these touches to people and upset them because they're not relevant.
Right.
The biggest mistake I see is that we don't take the time to plan. We don't put that client at the center of our universe and understand what is important to them. What can we do to express and get them to fully understand and be able to articulate back to us why we're different, why they should change? This whole emotional component we're missing. At top of funnel, it's more about emotion, less about the logical, but we have to segue them to you in the middle of the funnel to a bit of the logical. So they start putting the pieces together to say, oh, I really need this. And they do it differently. And I can actually tell you how it's different. I don't know how it all works yet. As I learn more from them, because I trust them, then I'll work through the actual logistics and the logical reasons why this is a better fit for us. But I think that's the biggest thing I see. It's frustrating as heck for me because these systems are like, you know, like I say, they're rocket ships. They basically will send out as many messages as human, you know, as you, before you get blacklisted kind of thing.
Yep.
But if you put the wrong ingredients, it's like, you know, making a souffle in your kitchen. If you put the wrong things in there, if you use baking soda instead of sugar, you're going to get a very ill-tasting chocolate souffle.
Absolutely. That's so interesting that it's pretty much the same. You know what it makes me think about, Mary Lou, is like, okay, and I don't know why this came to mind, but go with it. But you know, in the fashion industry right now, there's a lot of small business designers who are really into slow fashion, they call it.
Yeah.
Slow fashion, where it's organic, it's equitably sourced, it mm-hmm. is not just mass produced, it's more unique to their right. niche customer right. and client, and they are blowing up.
Right.
They are blowing up. I have a client that is like that. He's a designer. It is unbelievable. And it's almost like we need to have a little bit, and I'm not saying that technology is not helpful, but it's almost, I feel like we also need to have this slow sales. There needs to be this segment of, yes, we have these things, but then how do we segment out of that and really start having high touch, low tech?
You know, and technology to its benefit allows us, I had a friend, a colleague who used to describe technology as allowing us to spin multiple plates. So you got them on your feet, you got them on your hands, you got them on your head, they're all spinning around. And it's all these different types of accounts, these different ways to serve. But technology allows us to manage them all very easily and remind us when it's time to do the high touch or when it's time to get on a blog post or whatever it is. You know, we have like a bunch of little series now that can remind us to do things in the right order so that we have the best experience laid out for our clients. That's what technology is designed to do. But we have to know, to your point, what the process and the strategy is by putting that client in the center of our universe and understanding them at a very deep level, how they function, how they do their workflow. If I'm sitting at the desk, what does my day in the life look like as a client? What are things that are keeping me from getting to finish a project, to do a project that is done well, to start a project? You know, what are those things as a, through the lens of our product that highlight the fact that we're not there yet. We need to be able to just get a little bit further into our knowledge and highlight something that we know we can take us, that can take us a step further to solve our problems.
Yeah, that is so good. And I think it's so interesting that your problem that you're seeing is the same that I'm seeing bottom. And I think there's so much there, which is why we exist, right? We get to help lead these companies and these small businesses and really making sure they don't get lost in the technology. Because I think the convenience is easy to be like, oh, this is so much more convenient than doing it this way. So let's go that way. But I think a lot of times companies have good intentions. They just don't have the awareness. They don't have that. But that's why we're needed to be able to come in and help them realize, like, actually, wait, we need to pull back the layers and really understand on a deeper level. Because when we do that, we start aligning ourselves with the right customers who will actually not just pay, but they will also stay.
Right, exactly. And, you know, that we can leverage technology to emotionally stimulate, intellectually inspire, and positively improve their condition. It's just that we have got to be able to feed this engine with those messages in the order we think will allow them to absorb it, believe it, and trust us to then advance them. They advance themselves through the funnel. You know, it's like they sell themselves at that point.
That so, so true when we do that right. I love that.
So I'm speaking with Natasha Hemingway. Natasha, thank you so much for your time today. This has been absolutely a great discussion and so heartwarming. And I think, you know, one of the things that I know for me personally is that I tend to think of people that don't get this as quote unquote lazy at times. So I'm tainted, you know, where you're like, no, this is, we're selling with heart, you know, and we're teaching people and we're, and I think that's such a great attitude. I've learned that from you today that I should stop, you know, when I get to that point where I'm like, I should just realize, look, these are multiple humans.
That's it. And they don't know what they don't know. And it's also what's beautiful is it gives you the opportunity to come in and be able to provide a solution to them. And I think when we think that way in our business, right, we're selling with heart, not hustle. We're focused on what are they struggling with? How can we bring a solution to them? How can we partner with them? How can we bring value? But then also helping them duplicate that in the way that they show up to their clients and customers as well. It becomes this ripple and everybody starts winning.
Absolutely. Empathy. So how do we get a hold of you to learn more from you? What do we do?
Yes. So you can find me on my website at natashahemingway.com. That's with two M's. Okay. You on Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube. I mean, everywhere. Natasha, it is. Facebook, everywhere is Natasha Hemingway. And the website honestly gives you, if it's a speaker interest form or a workshop or training or consulting or whatever, coaching, it's all on the website. So,
okay, very good. And I'll be sure for the listeners that we have a page for Natasha. So all her links will be on there. So you can go to any of the sites and they'll direct you to marylutyler.com and there'll be a nice page with all of her info on it. Thank you again, Natasha. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me and excited to serve and pour into your community and look forward to a continued conversation.
Wonderful.